Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello, everybody. Andy Burt here. Welcome along to episode 201 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by Jonathan and Jess from BBC Bite Size as we explore materials and resources for supporting young learners. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with the team from BBC Bite Size. So I'm delighted to say for the podcast this week, we're joined by Jonathan and Jess from BBC Bite Size. Hello to both of you. How are you?
Very good. Hello. Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Very good. Nice to see you both. I thought we'd start off with some introductions, if that's all right. Shall we go to you, Jess, first of all?
Hi, thank you so much for having us, Andy. This is really exciting. We don't often get an opportunity to talk about our work, so thank you for having us. My name's Jess Denning, and I am an assistant producer on BBC Bite Size. I mostly work on primary content, so content for the primary audience, which suits me down to a T because in a previous life I was a primary school teacher, so I absolutely love making content for this audience because I feel like I know them really, really well.
You'll try.
I'll hand over to Jonathan.
Over to you, Jonathan.
Hi, everyone. Yeah, thank you very much for having us. My name's Jonathan. I'm a producer on Bite Size as well. I've been working on primary mostly for a while. I joined the BBC about 14 years ago. Yeah, to work on a site called Learning Zone Broadband Class Clips.
That's a catchy title.
I think probably maybe some of your audience will remember the Learning Zone. It's that thing that teachers used to tape at about 2 a.m. So this was the sort of associated with that. And I think the BBC thought, you know, we'll let teachers go to bed without faffing with their tape recorder and we'll just put the clips online. So that's what I started doing when I joined. But then I quickly moved into doing bite-sized stuff. And it's more or less always been primary stuff that I've looked after. And yeah, I love it. It's a great place to work and we get to work on some really nice things. So yeah. Great to come and share a bit about what we do.
Oh, definitely. I think it's such a privileged job. When we first got in touch, I was just saying, God, that is so exciting, you know, to work BBC Bite Size, to work for the BBC. In fact, in the run-up to the recording, I was thinking about previous guests we've had on the podcasts. We are nearly up to our 200th episode. In fact, this episode might go out after our 200th, maybe. But thinking back to some of the previous episodes, you're actually the second and third BBC BBC member of staff that I've chatted to. I've chatted to somebody who works in children's programmes for the BBC for ages, for a number of years, a lovely bloke called Nigel Plaskett, who I don't know whether you know or you've heard of, and he's basically a puppeteer.
Oh, right.
They got in touch with me because the BBC got in touch with me because they were putting together a new programme. And Nigel Plaskett had written it, I think, and he was in it in terms of using puppets. So he came on the podcast and he was chatting to me about the programme. And I just happened to ask him about kind of previous things he'd done. And he said, well, I started off, I think he said, in the 1970s as an actor. Mm. And I was kind of a struggling actor. I wasn't picking up many jobs. And then somebody happened to say, basically, we've got a children's program that's coming up with puppets. You know, can you use puppets? Are you a puppeteer? And because he was out of work, he said yes. And then as luck would have it, the studio where he was right next door to the Muppet studio. And he basically spent his time going through to see the Muppets and Jim Henson creating the Muppets and mm-hmm. the Muppet show. And he ended up on Muppets films. So he was telling me this, and I was thinking, how did I not know this? He was saying to me, he was in the Muppets Christmas Carol. He was holding on. He was he was operating the Muppet in all of those key like songs and things like that in the Muppets Christmas Carol and Muppets Treasure Island. He went on to do Spitting Image, and he had the politician John Major in Spitting Image. He's just done such a lot. It was just incredible. So yeah, so I think to me, meeting anybody from the BBC, I always find it exciting, really.
We might be a disappointment now, Andy, following that.
The other thing, actually, the other exciting thing that he said he'd worked on Labyrinth with David Bowie, the film. Right. He said, I spent a week with David Bowie doing the dance scenes. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course you did. Of course you did. So there you are. So you're based over in... you're based at home partly, but also at Salford, is that right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. We're based in Salford, actually, with children's as well. We're all one department, so all the children's programming and online as well is over in Salford with us, and BBC Education's based in Salford. But then Bite Size has kind of teams around the different nations as well that make nation-specific content for their audience as well.
Yes.
But, yeah, we're in Salford. It's a lovely place, and... yeah, Media City is where everything happens, and there's studios there for various BBC programmes from like Blue Peter, Match of the Day. They do a lot of filming of like ITV shows there as well. And we've got Coronation Street just over the other side of the Keys from us too, that you can sort of look into from above from our like office windows.
Am I right in thinking if you bump into somebody who is the sort of A-list star or celebrity, that you're not actually allowed, if you work for the BBC, you're not supposed to acknowledge the fact that they are an A-list celebrity. You're not allowed to chase them around or anything like that.
I think it's probably a bit of, yeah, it's like a kind of unwritten rule, probably, that you're not supposed to sort of bother people coming in. But I'm sure from time to time, people do say hi and stuff like that.
That must be quite weird for the A-list celebrity as they walk through there thinking, doesn't anybody recognise me? I don't know who I am.
Maybe, yeah. Because they have, I mean, you do see people quite frequently in Media City because they have BBC Breakfast there. So people come in and out of the doors quite often.
Yes. Definitely. Which brings me on to, have you ever met or bumped into somebody that you've been awestruck by in terms of that Salford Media City?
I did bump into one of my childhood literary heroes, Jacqueline Wilson, in the lifts, and was really uncool and just sort of stared at her because I think she's amazing. She's still amazing. But I also loved her as a child. And there's something quite special about meeting a childhood hero, I think. Someone that you've adored for that long. But I didn't say anything. I just looked at her adoringly. So hopefully she wasn't too freaked out.
In a creepy way.
Yeah.
At Early Excellence, we know that strong key stage one practice doesn't happen by accident. It's built on a deep understanding of how young children learn, thoughtful curriculum design, and classrooms that genuinely support independence, talk, and thinking. That's why we're bringing together teachers and leaders for our Early Excellence Key Stage 1 conference, where we'll explore what high-quality Key Stage 1 practice really looks like. Join Professor Julie Fisher alongside colleagues from schools as we focus on provision-led learning, purposeful environments, and the role of the adult in supporting sustained learning beyond the early years. This is a day rooted in evidence, shaped by classroom reality, and designed to give you clarity and confidence in your Key Stage 1 practice. The Early Excellence Key Stage 1 conference is taking place on Tuesday, the 24th of March, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel in Swindon. To book your place and find out more, visit our website, earlyexcellence.com.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Okay, right. So you work on BBC Bite Size. You put together materials for a broad range of age ranges. And so what we're going to do is we're going to focus in on materials for our younger children and a range of different sorts of things. And we're going to endeavour, we've never done this before, but we're going to endeavour to sort of share screen so we can have a look at the materials that are there. So I think that's a really interesting thing to do. While you get that set up, I think it's an interesting thing to think about is in terms of how the materials are used, I think itself is quite interesting in that there's a long tradition of teachers, early years teachers and primary school teachers generally using TV, using media to support their practice. You know, I can think of times, you know, when I was little, you know, it used to be, this is how old I am, basically they used to wheel a TV into a room for us to watch the TV. And many people, I'm sure many people listening to this will kind of connect with that, you know. And then there used to be TV programs like Number Fun and other things, you know, like with El Nombre. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you know El Nombre?
We had some El Nombre clips until quite recently, actually. I think they probably still exist somewhere on the site. You could probably find those, yeah.
There's some absolute classic things out there. And we used to do, when I was a Key Stage 1 teacher, there used to be a Magic Grandad. It used to be a thing. Do you remember Magic Grandad? He was a granddad of a boy and a girl, and he used to hold their hands and they used to go back in time. And they went back to the Great Fire of London and things like that. And it was just, as a Key Stage 1 teacher, when we covered the Great Fire of London, it was like their favourite thing. We used to watch it over and over. They absolutely loved it. So, yeah, so there is a tradition there. You know, people will absolutely connect with what you're sharing with us, because actually there is a real tradition there of using clips, using videos, using games, all sorts of different things that I think, yeah, people have a special place in people's hearts, really.
And that's what Bite Size kind of grew out of, really, those educational programs. It's just when, you know, the internet came into existence and we took a lot of those clips for what Learning Zone broadband class clips was. It was effectively like the online version of that. And then that's grown and changed into what BBC teaches now, which is like clips for teachers. But, you know, you'd be surprised probably how many of those like clips you could probably still find, because every time, you know, like we take them down, a teacher writes in and says, where's that clip gone? We want it back because we're using it. So we still got loads of this stuff around. And it's always good to, like, you know, occasionally, like, we move the site around, change things, and you rewatch some of those clips. And, you know, like, the old stuff is the good stuff as well.
There's some really good stuff out there. It definitely is. Yeah. And I guess it lives on, doesn't it? Okay. Onto the website then, the BBC Bite Size website. So talk us through it then. What are we seeing? What sorts of things are there?
Yeah. So just to kick off, I suppose, at the top, really, like a top level, if you're not familiar with Bite Size is the BBC's education service, really. So it provides curriculum resources for children to use all the way from early years through to GCSE. Bite Size actually started 1998, so we're coming up to sort of 30 years now, which is incredible. And it started as a GCSE revision resource, and I think maybe most people will probably be familiar with Bite Size as a kind of GCSE brand.
Yes.
But it's grown and it's expanded over the years, and we now do everything, like I say, from early years, Key Stage 1, Key Stage 2, secondary, and we've broadened it as well. So it also has careers advice, there's things for parents, there's things for teachers, there's also well-being resources, mental health resources, healthy relationship resources as well on Bite Size. So it's not just a kind of revision site, it's a proper learning companion, as we like to see it.
Yes.
But we're talking about the primary section of the site today. If you head over to Bite Size, you get presented immediately with an option to select your kind of phase, whether that's primary, secondary, whether you're a teacher, and you can tunnel into each one of those, and then you can pick which nation you're in, and everything then will sort of filter down according to your curriculum that you're learning. And then within that, you can either choose your phase or you can choose the year group that you're specifically in. Let's take a look in Key Stage 1, actually.
Yeah, thanks.
And once you're in there, you can pick your subject. And one thing that's maybe, you know, different to Bite Size to what else is out there is we try and do every subject on the curriculum. So we've got art and design, you can see here. We've got citizenship, computing, design, technology, as well as those core subjects like English, maths and science as well. They probably tend to do best for us. Lots of people, we love those. But we also got history that does really well, doesn't it, Jess? And we're sort of adding to these and improving these all the time as well.
Yeah.
So I guess you can think of Bite Size in terms of two kind of forms of content. We've got our learner guides, which are those sort of bite-sized guides to something, you know, what is place value,
okay.
what is a volcano? And they've got like videos, quizzes, text, graphics and stuff like that. But we've also got our games too. And we've got about 40 games now. Jess has worked quite a lot on games. Do you want to sort of take over at this point? And
so that must be great fun, Jess, to work on the games with that kind of learning content as well. But you've got a range of games then to have a go at.
It is really fun. And actually, producing games which are educational games gives you real purpose, which is, it's quite nice when you're going into that kind of creative space and you know that you want it to align with the curriculum, but it's also got to have really great engagement levels. I mean, there's kind of no point having loads of learning in there if the kids aren't enjoying it and playing it. So it's a fun balancing act. But one of our most popular Key Stage 1 games is Karate Cats Maths and Karate Cats English. So there's two. And it's just really fun and silly, but has great core learning in there, in that you get to pick your cat character and then your cat character gets different karate upgrades as you go through. But I mean, it's not an overly complicated mechanic. It's quite simple, but that means that it's really accessible for the younger audience, which is really important, is we want children to be able to play these games without having an adult there next to them. The idea is that they can play them independently. So if we delve into the game, we get one of the karate cats, and it's kind of based in this karate dojo.
See, I can see it now. It looked great fun, I have to say. Am I right in thinking this is the one that's got the voiceover as well?
Has this got David Tennant's voice? Yes.
Yes. So that in itself is a funny thing, isn't it?
So you could just go and play this just to listen to David Tennant if you want.
You could do. So in terms of then what we're aiming to do there, you've got some literacy objectives, you've got some maths objectives as well. You've got, in terms of the literacy, what we can see here is Toby plays with his toy, and then we're filling in a word gap, aren't we? So his toy kite, his toy song, his sleep. And so we're sounding out those words in order to solve the puzzle.
Yeah. So I think within Karate Cats English, it's mostly punctuation and grammar that you're looking at.
Okay.
For Key Stage 1. So it'll be year 1 and year 2.
So that's fab. I love the kind of the simplicity of it. And it's good fun, isn't it? In that actually you're solving these, the kind of the gaps in the words. We're adding words in. We're using our phonic skills and also those grammatical skills. But actually, it's quick and it's fun and it's very accessible for children.
Yeah, and it's things like there's silly little payoff animations. So when you get a question right or a question wrong, you might get one of the karate cats doing something a little bit silly. So it just brings in that, kind of level of engagement and not making it too serious.
Yeah, which is what we like. Fantastic. Okay, so what about games for younger children, for reception age children?
Yeah, so we actually, the reception offer, we came out 3 or 4 years ago, which included loads of new learner guides as well as some new games. Because during COVID, we had so many teachers saying to us, we love what you're doing, but we need more content for early years. So then we had this big push a few years ago to produce loads of content and some really gorgeous things on there. It was really, really nice projects to work on. Yes. So one of the games that we have is actually a partnership with Number Blocks, which I'm sure lots of early years teachers are aware of. Number Blocks.
Very popular, Number Blocks. You see it everywhere, in fact. Yeah.
We went in to do some user testing, we call it, with some schools while we were coming up with the aims for this project. And we went into these reception classes and we were sat down chatting with these reception children. And we said, oh, we're from the BBC. Do you know the BBC? And they all looked at us completely blankly, like, no, we have never heard of the BBC. And then I said, have you heard of the Number Blocks? And they're all like, yes.
Brilliant. Okay, so talk us through, what is it that the children are doing when they access Number Blocks in terms of the game?
Yeah, so this game is it's a very specific learning objective. It's called See the Amount, and it's all about subitizing, which is a really core skill in EYFS, as I'm sure you know. So this one is seeing the different number blocks and then being able to subitize and say what that amount is. So it's really simple. But it's quite nice, I think, that you go in and you know exactly what to expect. So I think if you were teaching this as part of your curriculum, you know that you're going into this game and you're going to be getting subitizing.
So yes.
the so door. Really, there's a door that opens, and you rub away the different blocks, and then it will show you some blocks in grey, and then you've got to pick which amount it is. And there's a few different versions of this game, but you get to see all the different number box characters, which is really nice.
That is really simple but clever at the same time, in that it's a format that children, I think, will be familiar with. It's almost like a stars in your eyes kind of thing, isn't it? With that, which, again, showing my age. But that kind of idea, you know, you've got the door at the back of a stage. You've got a sort of a kind of an audience in front. You've got a panel there as well. And then you've got sort of a mystery door at the back there, where you're kind of seeing the number just in terms of block form, but only very briefly. And then can you work out who it is that links to it in terms of the number? Simple but fun. And I can see that actually children would really love that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you finding that are people using this in different contexts? I don't know whether you know that. You know, so teachers using this within the classroom with small groups of children, with larger groups of children in terms of whole class. But then at the same time, are you seeing this being used outside of school, either for homework or, you know, for children to just access in their own time at different points? Are you seeing that
Yeah, I mean, Bite Size is fairly multi-purpose. So we think of Bite Size as a child-first resource primarily. All the content is designed to be used sort of independently with a, you know, like in front of a child. And, you know, that can be at home, and it can, you know, they could use it at school as well. I think we kind of think of it as, we want it to be as independent for the child to use as possible. So we kind of imagine that home setting when we're creating a lot of this. But, you know, we've been into schools and we've seen that children, you know, sometimes around their classwork, you know, they go and play a game like this, you know, in rotation with some other activities that the teacher might want to do. Yeah, but you know, we see that these games are really popular outside of school as well. So yeah,
definitely. And just going back to what Jess was saying just before, I would imagine that the pandemic was probably a bit of a game changer, in that at that point, although you're already established as BBC Bite Size, suddenly actually you've got the whole nation wanting online materials and resources, in terms of teachers needing to set things online far more than they've probably ever done before, and that actually the need for all of the things that you have created must have been great at that time.
Yeah, the pandemic was a really big moment for everybody, wasn't it, really? But, you know, but for Bite Size, when the schools all closed, they pretty much closed overnight, didn't they? Okay. And the BBC made this commitment that they were going to provide educational support during the pandemic. And I think it was, you know, they committed to doing something like 2 or 3 hours of educational programming per day across their channels and the red button as well, and a lesson every single day for children from year one through to GCSE. And I think we got a lot of attention for that as well. I think people, maybe the bits that people remember were things like that Danny Dyer did a history lesson, and Sergio Aguero did some Spanish, and David Attenborough did a science lesson. But we were kind of involved in that like online series of lessons, and I worked across the maths offering for primary school children. Yeah, like logistically it was huge, really. We ended up producing like 1,500 maths lessons during that period, with almost like no lead in time. So we were working kind of like days in front of where children were learning. It was kind of crazy, but yeah. it was really good, because that's where kind of teachers stepped in. So we had teachers writing lessons for us, and we also had like an incredible set of partners, people like White Rose Maths, Pearson, Twinkle, Classroom Secrets. There's so many. I'd love to thank them all. And because really everybody just stepped in and kept this whole thing afloat. And you know, I think we learned so much during that, just through like the repetitions that we did of creating these things. We learned so much about like what the audience wanted and what they used and what kind of video worked and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just what else was out there, because we had, you know, like all this different content coming in from people, all these different styles, videos. And yeah, it was a really interesting thing to work on and to be a part of.
Yeah, yeah. And I imagine that you would learn a lot during that time, that actually you yourselves are putting together materials at such a pace at that time that now you must look back on it, I guess, and maybe not, right? I don't know. But you look back on that time and you think, actually, we learned such a lot about how you can put together materials quickly that in the past we might have taken 6 months to put together. Actually, we did it in a few days or a week or two.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Like that. Yeah, that repetition of doing something 1,000 times, you know, really, really, really gives you a lot of skills. But also, yeah, like seeing what other people are doing more. And also, you know, we had millions of, you know, children using this thing. So we got so much more feedback in terms of like what they were using and what they were saying. And Jess sort of hinted at it earlier, you know, after the pandemic, we built up our early years resources because we got a lot of parents going, hey, where's the resources for us? And we also sort of bolstered a lot of our kind of non-core subjects in the sense that they're not English, science and maths, but like art and design technology. We built up those because we got a lot of feedback saying we want more on creative subjects and things like that.
Yeah.
But also it gave us that opportunity to revisit subjects like English and maths, because I think we saw from that pandemic offering that they'd probably fallen behind where teaching practices were, the way it was being taught in schools, the stuff that we had. So we used that as an opportunity to develop what we've got.
Yes. I was going to say, actually, you know, when we looked at number blocks just then, you know, subitizing for young children is such a big thing, you know, and has been for a few years now, but certainly became in the last EYFS framework, became a real focus in terms of what young children needed to be doing around mathematics, and that it was less of a focus on really getting kind of beyond 10 and to 20 and beyond that. And it's not about, you know, impressing everybody with being able to count to 50 or whatever in reception, but actually about really focusing on recognizing number, the kind of the patterns within number, if you like, the shape of a number, how, you know, that five is made up of a two and a three or a four and a one, and that actually you've got that shape, you know, when you see five dots on a dice, you know that's five, you know, all of those things, that actually it's great that you can then transfer that to something like number blocks, and you can do it in a slightly different context. You can make a game of it. You can make it visually really stimulating. You know, I think that link to actually what people are definitely teaching at the moment within the classroom, and therefore what you're taking into BBC Bite Size and the games around it, I think is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And I think our previous resources weren't really in step with that kind of kind of teaching. And for me, I don't come from a teaching or maths background. My degree's in paleontology. And
wow.
Yeah, I don't know, well-trodden route into what we're doing. But, you know, I'm a complete convert to this way of teaching maths. You know, I think it's brilliant. And I think what you get sometimes, you know, like I've spoken to my neighbour the other day, he was talking about his kids' math homework. It was sort of, oh, we didn't learn like this when we were at school.
Yeah.
I didn't either. But I just think if I love the way this is visualized. I love the way that, you know, like these little tools that you can use to explain the deeper understanding behind numbers and things like that. And so working all that out during, you know, like this bite-sized daily offering and then developing it as part of our new offer was really nice. And, you know, it's a whole new way of like presenting and almost kind of like storytelling this way of teaching maths. So I'm really glad we got the opportunity to do that. And we learned so much as part of that, which brought us to this point with our offer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And what I like about it as well is that they're short, aren't they? And short, they're short and snappy, that you're not expecting children to be on there for hours. What you're wanting actually is for the children to have that those rich experiences, you know, in the classroom and outside of the classroom that we're talking about. Physical experiences, say, you know, around mathematics, for example, you know, children need to work in the physical. They need to be lifting, carrying, moving things, placing things, doing all of those kinds of things that are so important to building up that understanding of number. And then as a supplement to that, of course, you've got those brilliant games that we've just been talking about, that actually, you know, you can end a lesson with a quick game of this, or you can be having a go at home on something that actually is going to embed that learning over time. So what have we got here? You've just shared the screen again. What have we got here?
Yeah, I thought this might lead us off into looking at one of those kind of maths guides. So this, to start with, this is the sort of year one maths page. And you can see, like you said, it's all broken down into those kind of smaller learning objectives, really. Subtraction within five, fact families, one or more, one more or one less to 100. So you can pick your guide that you want to do. Let's look at the edition one. And I think a couple of things that we try to do with these guides is just keep them really clean and really clear in terms of the presentation of information, because we know how important that is, I think, just for building understanding, but also accessibility as well for children using the site. And every single lesson that we've got on here, every single guide that we've got on here, is structured the same way. So hopefully children can get used to learning in the same pattern. They get the same experience for every topic that they come through. So they all begin with a little introduction, which is a kind of like potted summary of what that's all about, which you can see at the top. There's some text and there's some images explaining that. But really the whole thing is built around this kind of key interactive in the middle. So this is an interactive exercise that you can click to start, and then you go into an initial video. And within this activity, there's three videos, and they're about a minute long, because we know, you know, like, kids focus best when videos are shorter. But these three videos are broken up with questions. So they're broken up with a little question to check your understanding. So you learn a bit, you get to do a question to check that you've understood. Okay. And all through this, we've got these little characters that that sort of lead you on your way. So I got this question wrong, and you get a kind of funny, humorous, playful animation that comes afterwards.
It's not stressing, is it? Yeah, I know. I like that. You know, and you've also got real life, very much real life and recognizable kind of scenarios there. You know, so we've just seen children playing football and two more children turn up. How many are there now? You know, those sorts of things. And it's done in quite a nice cartoony sort of way. So it doesn't feel like you're kind of going through a kind of a dull process at all, or being tested. Actually, you're kind of having a go at this, and then it's kind of on to the next one and quite short and sharp.
Yeah, you say as we've got about 10 parrots on a washing line.
Recognizable.
They largely are sort of real world things, because we know that that's helpful for sort of embedding concepts as well, you know. That children can see how this applies to the real world as well. But there's also, you know, like playful and humorous things in there. We've got another guide on capacity here, and again, you know, like, this uses like orange juice in a glass to explain when something's empty, half full and full, and like a little recycling bin as well.
But they're things, aren't they? You know, they're real life contexts. I think sometimes, you know, what I like is that it's very much, the images are really clear, so that, you know, when you're looking at that recycling box with lots of different cardboard packaging inside of it, children will know what that is. They'll recognize that. Whereas sometimes I think, particularly on paper, things are drawn as an outline of a, say, a bucket, and we're expecting children to recognize what that is, when really that outline, to an adult, you can recognize that as a bucket. But to a child who hasn't got the same experience as the previous experiences, they just don't. They don't recognize it. So I really like the way that these are drawn, and they're really clear. You know, those glasses of orange juice, for example, they're clear. That's clearly what they are. Whereas because you've taken the time to make them visually as 3D as possible, so it's, you know, it's obvious this is what it is. Whereas you just draw that as basically a kind of like a rectangle. You know, and actually, you're trying to say to a child, well, it's a glass. Is it half full or half empty? They don't recognize it as a glass. Do you see what I mean? Simple, I know, but it is important.
Yeah, a lot of thought goes into the style and the characters that we use, and even things like this. Do you know what I mean? It's the fact that it's a recycling bin. You know, we sort of consciously think about good sustainability practice that we can sort of model on screen as well. Yeah. There's a lot of thought that goes into the creation of what we do, and how consistent we want to make that experience, you know, as well. Like the characters that we've got, we want a good representation of children, so children can see themselves in the content that we have. And coming up with these characters as well, that you can see, I've got a kind of a display of all the characters that we've used so far within the content on screen at the moment. And we've given them all individual names, so that, you know, when they're referred to in questions and things like that, we're, consistent with that. And, you know, internally in-house, we've got little backstories for these, and we've got little circumstances when, you know, this child here will have their hair up or hair down and things like that. So and it's part of the job that's really fun to do, really, like kind of creating these styles, creating these characters, creating the worlds that you can help use to like communicate or teach a subject. It's something that I really like doing. So, and then, you know,
just to say to people who are listening, obviously this is an audio, so you're not seeing what we can see on the screen. We can see basically there are about 40 or 50 characters there that you've created over time, where you've got children of different sizes, you've got children of different ethnicities, you've got children, some children have disabilities, you've got a range of different ethnic representations as well. You've got all sorts of, all walks of life there, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real celebration of the diversity there. That must have taken a lot of time to do.
Yeah, it did. And we probably built this over a couple of years. So this kind of style predated the English and math stuff that we've been doing. But like you mentioned there about kind of representation, someone on our team who worked on this was deaf, and they were really keen for us to sort of represent in some way that community. So what we've done actually is we've created a series of these feedback animations that use British Sign Language, and they're really simple signs as well. So like if you're a child, you can pick up a simple sign as part of doing your maths work as well. So this one's "You're a Star," and we work with a deaf school to sort of record the teacher doing this sign. They suggested the ones that they thought would be quite easy to learn and quite useful within this. But here's this child doing this sign. And then, you know, maybe as part of that, you can learn a sign as part of doing what you're doing. And there's like, "You're amazing." There's various ones. If you go through the maths offer, you can probably see a few, but this has been a nice thing to do as part of it. So yeah, again, it's all part of that creating this experience that's quite fun to do. And you think about how you can apply it within, you know, various subjects, like I say.
Yeah, no, definitely. What I was going to ask you as well is, would it be possible for you to recommend some of your favourite games for different subjects or different areas of learning?
We've mentioned Karate Cats for English, Stage 1. That is sort of spelling, punctuation and grammar, really, objectives. And it's loosely aligned with the content of the SATs.
Okay.
What that covers, but really it's just a fun game. Yes. I think like it's got David Tennant as the voiceover being a bit of a silly cat, and it's kind of a really quick fire multiple choice style quiz, but it's dressed up with some really fun silly animations. And as you go through, your karate cat can earn belts, different colored belts, and you win cats that come to your dojo, and they all have funny names like Sushi Cat, and they have little silly animations as you click on them. And they do, this one's called John Claus Van Cat. I don't know. It was really good fun to.
Did you have to give feedback to David Tennant on his voiceover?
Oh no! Why would you? No, it was.
If you could just do more of a hi-ya, David, that would be great.
To be honest, I can just remember he really threw himself into it. I think, and weirdly enough, actually, we've got the MFL game, languages game that we've got, has Catherine Tate in as well. So we're sort of incrementally building up a kind of series of voiceovers from ex-Doctor Who sort of.
There you are, you've got people. Doctor Who link. Yeah, of course. Very good. Okay, so we've got key stage one in terms of literacy there. Should we go for a maths one? So another maths one. We've talked about number blocks, haven't we? Is there another one that you would recommend?
What about Canine Crew, Jess?
Yes, that's a good idea.
Okay.
So Canine Crew, this is actually new. So get out, have a play, let us know what you think. And this is, you go into this world of dogs and they're all really cute and friendly. And it's all about measurement. So quite a specific part of the maths curriculum. And you can do various things like go and help weigh parcels. So you're learning about grams and things like that. And you've got really cute characters. And again, you get little payoff animations when you get it right or you get it wrong. Well done, Jonathan's getting it right.
There you are. You've done well there. Yeah. So you can see, so that's a post office with a dog there. And are you the dog, the character then? And are you then, or are you taking something to it?
You kind of go in and you help the post dog. I see. Should say.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's a bakery as well where you can go in and you're measuring ingredients. So again, it's kind of these really real world situations and scenarios, which I think it leads on really nicely from the EYFS framework, understanding the world, going into this key stage one. And it's those maths concepts do get a bit trickier, but you're still exploring them within real life context. So I think that's really nice. And this has got really gorgeous, like high animation value as well. Got some 3D animation.
Yeah, no, it's fab. And so you can see there, you've got basically a townscape, you've got a map, an overview of the whole town, and then you've got different buildings within it. So you've got the post office, you've got the bakery, and is it a farm? Is that right?
It's a construction site down.
Construction site, I couldn't quite see.
Yeah.
Yeah, fab. So, I see. So that's weighing again.
Yeah, different materials. So you're deciding which one's light, which one's medium, which one's heavy.
Great.
Using that language as well.
Perfect. That sounds fab. Like it. Okay. So we've got one literacy, we've got one mathematics. Should we go for one other?
I think my personal favourite is Creative Labs, and that is art and design. And I think this is really fun because it's quite different to a lot of our other games where there's typically a right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
And this is so much more creative and open, and you can go in there and learn about color mixing, and you can use lots of different materials to create your pictures. It's kind of like, I know lots of people listening will remember paint, word paint that we used to play on. It's like a really upgraded fancy version of that. Loads of extra things, and you can put stickers in there from your favorite BBC characters and things like that. And so this is the color mixer. And so you have to unlock the colors in order to be able to use them to paint. So if you want to be able to make orange, you're given the primary colors, and then you've got to select the correct ones. So you're like red and yellow.
Yeah. So that visually is brilliant, isn't it? It's really, it draws you in, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you can get your karate cats in there, so you can make artwork around your karate cats.
That is fun.
Which is really cute. And then there's also a 3D model builder, so you can learn about 3D art in as much as you can on a digital product. So you can either build your own, or there's models that you can build.
Yes, that's brilliant.
Love templates that you can fill in.
Love it. Okay. Before you go, what are you working on next? I know that you've been very busy over the last few months working on specific things. What's about to come out, or what's in the pipeline?
Well, a project that Jonathan and I are working on is very close to our heart. Is this year we have been revamping, refreshing a load of English content for Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2, and it's primarily grammar and punctuation. And it's been a journey this year, hasn't it, Jonathan? We really wanted to do this justice. And so we went into this project possibly a bit naively of how much or how complicated the English landscape is and how it's taught in schools. Credit to teachers out there, because it's a really tricky subject to get right,
isn't it?
Yeah, and to make grammar and punctuation engaging and interesting, and to break it down into bite-sized chunks, that's really tricky. So we've tried our best.
I'm sure it will be fab. I mean, based on what we've seen that you've worked on for lots of other things, I'm sure it will be absolutely brilliant. And we will look forward to seeing it. We definitely will. Jonathan and Jess, it's been brilliant to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast and for sharing all of the materials that are out there. That's been absolutely brilliant. Eye-opening, I think, definitely.
Well, thanks very much for having us. Yeah, it's been nice to talk about it. We don't really talk about our jobs too much, do we, really?
Well, it's been absolutely brilliant, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Andy.
And there you have it. Thank you very much to Jonathan and to Jess for joining us this week on the podcast. And also, of course, to you people for listening along as well. That's about it from us. Have a good week, everybody, and we will see you next time.